Welcome everyone to this week's recording of The Week Ahead. I'm sitting in for Andrew, but don't worry, Dominique is still here as per usual. Dom, how are you?
Very well, Ben. How are you?
I'm good. It's incredibly hot here in London, as everyone that is here will know. I think it's actually hotter here at
The
the moment than it
British
is
tropical.
in California. It's warmer here than where you are, surprisingly.
The British tropical climate, huh?
Something like that. It's the warmest start to May on record, apparently. But let's not get concentrated on those statistics. Let's concentrate on US statistics. Should we kick things off on GDP? Everyone seems to have their take on it. Most are noting that, you know, while we saw contraction through the first quarter, consumption was strong. But then on top of that, you saw that net exports had a large role to play. I mean, what's your take, Dom?
So my suspicion is that the GDP is underestimated, largely due to something rather arcane, which is a classification of gold. So the gold, as you know, is both an industrial commodity and a financial asset. And there has been a big surge in gold imports. And depending on how you classify them, this import, if you classify them as an industrial commodity, it raises imports and it makes the trade deficit larger. But if you classify them as a financial asset, it doesn't change import, it raises financial inflows into the US. And the thing is, in terms of national account, when you have imports of an industrial commodity, it's also going to show up in purchases, say, of jewelry, for instance, or in higher inventories. And one of the mysteries of this release is that relative to the big increase in the deficit, which in the trade deficit, which drove the GDP into negative territory, the increase in inventory was very small. And I think it's because of misclassification that so what is called non-monetary gold import, which is basically the industrial commodity, it was probably over-recorded. It's probably the case that a greater share of the gold import were a financial asset, and financial assets, of course, don't get picked up by GDP statistics. So I think the trade deficit was probably overestimated, which speaks for concentrating on GDP, excluding inventory and trade deficit. And there you see very clearly that demand has been boosted by the front running of tariffs. The contribution of spending on goods is both by businesses through, you know, investment goods and consumers. That contribution is abnormally high and it's going to come down in the remainder of the year.
So, I mean, just put it in simple terms, what do you think GDP should look like for the rest of the year? Obviously, we had a contraction in Q1. Should we expect the same for Q2, Q3, or should we expect something a bit more normal?
So I think eventually we are going towards a contraction in final demand, so GDP excluding inventories and net export, which is what investors should focus on because it's a less volatile component. And that was 2.3% Q on Q this first quarter. I think about 40 basis point of that is due to the front running of tariff, so higher goods consumption, and I think we're going to move to a negative Q on Q final demand. So that's my expectation. Now we could have, I think we're going to have an adjustment in inventories and net export as we, you know, as we get the revision. You know, there are three GDP stats published. So the first one is always a bit noisy. But as the data gets cleaned up, I think we will see smaller negative impact of net export and inventory and slow down in final demand.
So, I mean, it's kind of an interesting point. How come you think inventories or the buildup in inventories will slow? Because obviously the sort of the big headline around the tariffs obviously came in April. Okay, incredibly early into Q2. But obviously since then we've had tariffs walked back at least temporarily and some sort of an idea of a deal. So I mean, at least I'd assume that companies are still trying to get in before this sort of 90-day deadline. So is it the fact that, okay, there will probably still be some front running, but probably a lot less than there was in Q1 when there was ridiculous amount of uncertainty?
Sure, but I think the front running will get offset by a buildup of inventory. If it was properly measured, the increase in the external deficit, so the increase in import, should be offset by an increase in inventories. So I think as the measurement gets better and the BEA adjusts its classification of gold import, we will see less of tariff front running. The other thing I would like to say about the tariff front running, it's been going on for quite some time because by importers. And Trump has been talking about tariff and raising tariff, for a very long time. He's been, at least that's one point where he has been consistent. I think what surprised people is the size and the complexity of the tariff increase. So that build-up of inventories is not it started actually last year, and at some point is going to stop. I mean, if you look at the tariff, the average effective tariff in April, roughly speaking, based on daily data on cash deposits at the Treasury, I think the average effective tariff rate probably went to 3.5%. From 2.3% in March, and we are going to the next, right now, even after all the relief, we are still at 25%. So this month, May, is when the big shock comes, and after that, there won't be much point in front running.
God, no. Okay. Well, GDP wasn't the only data out this week, of course. Labour market, we had quite a few sort of data points. I feel like claims and jolts set us up for what everyone thought was going to be a weak NFP or a weak unemployment rate. Claims were a bit higher than expected. Jolts had some funky numbers. So I think I remember job openings sunk 300,000. I know you look at specific sort of measurements in jobs, but still that as a headline is quite remarkable. But then obviously NFP came out stronger than expected, in line with Sam's forecast, which is great. And then the unemployment rate practically just remained unchanged, I believe. I mean, what's your take on the labor market? What's going on there?
So it's very striking because of the contrast with the soft data and even manufacturing employment and manufacturing. Once the 25 percentage point tariff come in, trust me, manufacturing employment is going to get hit and not in a nice way. So it's really striking that it was roughly unchanged this month. And I think it speaks to the complexity and the depth of the change, that what is happening is so such a fundamental break with the business environment that was in place until recently. And it's so complex. Each country has its own tariff, and you see the complexity whenever the administration tries to walk back the tariff, like this week when they tried to give tariff credit for the car manufacturing sector. It's a very complicated formula, and it's very simple. Which countries used to live in autarky? Communist countries in Eastern Europe, the Soviet Union, and they had a huge administration trying to determine What could not come in and at what price. And that's basically what happens when you try to bring in protectionism. You need a strong government implementation and monitoring capability. So we're going to have to hire those civil servants that we just let go. And of course, for the private sector, there are also huge costs because they have to hire compliance people. So, in my view, the lack of reaction of NFP is that people are still trying to figure out what is going on because it's so complex, so deep. And the reaction is going to come when they have to actually pony up the 25 percentage point increase in prices. I mean, to be fair, it's not going to be 100% pass through to the final buyer. We're already seeing that import price inflation is slowing down. But there will be a big increase in cost, and that's when we are going to see the reaction.
And you said of all of this, I mean, once in that structure is that manufacturing employment is going to get hit hard. Do you have a view on how bad NFP readings could get? I mean, could we land in a world where there's negative readings again, or because we're obviously settling around 100,000, we have some numbers below, a few above, but could we end up in a world where NFPs are negative again?
Sure, if we are in recession, but I think this time around, the NFP are going to lag GDP because during the pandemic, businesses experienced labor shortages. So the result is if you look at labor market flows after the pandemic, they are smaller. The net flows, like for instance, you were talking about the JOLTS, the net hire is about the same as before the pandemic. But the gross flows, so hire, layoff, quits, they are much lower. And that's because having experienced staff shortages, businesses are hanging on to their workers. They are giving them, better wages, better working conditions. And so that suggests we will have a this time around, we are going to have a fair amount of labor hoarding, which was the characteristic of recessions until the 2000, until the bursting of the IT bubble and during the GFC, same thing. There was no labor hoarding. So definitely, if we are in a recession, negative NFP are part of the, of how it's going to work. But I think we will probably see negative growth before negative NFP.
I think this is all just quite nicely leading us into the Fed next week. But before we just jump there, I think we should just round off on tariffs. So it doesn't feel like we can go a week without some substantial update. I think the most recent one we've got, at least from the US side, is this new sort of strategy from the US, from the White House, where we're going to have weekly cycles of six countries. I'm assuming it's going to, I don't know the names off the top of my head, but I'm assuming India and some of China's friends are basically in those blocks of six. What do you make of this strategy? Do you feel like we're getting closer towards mass deals, or is it going to be something more like what we've had between the US and Japan, where, okay, look, countries are included in this sort of potential deal cycle, but nothing actually really happens, nothing concrete actually happens?
So the reality is that negotiating a trade deal usually takes several years. So two things could be happening. One, the administration is looking for an off-ramp, and it could make a quick agreement that allows them to walk back their tariff without losing face. Nothing is basically going to happen. And then the administrative machinery will grind and will start implementing the 25% average effective tariff rate.
I mean, let's just assume that, because I'm sort of in the base case, at least my view is that a lot of these negotiations Probably won't lead to much. I'm sure there will be deals out there. I mean, Trump loves a deal, and obviously countries do want to make the deal. They do want to get tariff rates down. But ultimately, I don't think countries are going to be able to offer enough to get something meaningful. And so I wanted to entertain your sort of counterfactual, which is, okay, look, there's a potential where the US can walk back tariffs and sort of save face. What would happen if that was the case? How would the US walk back tariffs and go back to a world where there aren't tariffs?
So, I would give that a very low probability because I think President Trump still hasn't changed his view on tariff. He's been saying most recently that we just have to go through a difficult period and then the payoff will be wonderful. But let's assume you're right. I think they just claim victory. They just said we've just spoken to Japan and we've agreed on both sides to eliminate tariff, and that's it. And things continue. I mean, the tariff go down, but the non-tariff barriers, which can be very substantial, continue as before. So I think there is a bit of a trade-off between the time frame where the administration would claim victory and the depth of the agreement, because negotiating an agreement with any depth and going into the nitty-gritty of a customs regime, which are horrendous but very important. So to give you an example, today is the end of the de minimis clause on Chinese parcels. So there was this loophole that allowed China to send parcels to the US worth, I think, less than $800, if I remember correctly, without clearing custom, which was exploited by the like of Shein and fast fashion retailer and really abused. And so, rightly so in my view, President Trump wanted to end it. But then the big couriers like UPS went to the White House, obtained an extension. Extension was granted. And today, but the tariff regime, the customs regime, were changed in such a way that the loophole will still be there. So there is really a trade-off between how fast you can arrive at something and what you arrive at, the whether it's something that has been well thought out and really will make a difference. So if there is a desire to walk back the tariff policy without losing face, this could be a way of doing it. I'm just not sure, listening to President Trump and his view on tariff, on mercantilism, is something he's held for much of his life. So I wish you were right, but what I am seeing makes me think that we're not turning around.
I guess the other way we could get there is, the Senate forces him, Congress forces him to tame tariffs. I saw the US Senate rejected sort of the latest bill to tame Trump's tariffs. I mean, is that the end of this political mess? Does Trump sort of have free rein now to do as he wants with tariffs? I mean, what's your take here?
Yeah, that was quite unfortunate. The voting was 49 on both sides, and it happened that some Democratic senators were out to a conference. Otherwise, they could have won the vote. But the vote would have been rejected by the House, and also President Trump would have vetoed it. And for sure, opposition to the tariff is growing, and as a cost, the economic cost of the tariff and how, as people get angry, President Trump will lose support. This policy of President Trump will lose support, but that will take time. In my view, the bigger risk to the tariff is the Supreme Court, because there have been a number of lawsuits because President Trump has used a law called the IEEPA, International Economic Emergency Power Act. And on the merit, there is a strong legal case to be made that the IEEPA does not empower President Trump to raise tariff union as he has been doing, that this should be done by Congress. So there's been a lot of ink spilled on that topic, and I think the lawyer's case is strong. Now, this is going to go through the courts. It will take time. It will eventually go to the Supreme Court. And the question is, will they take up the case? Are they prepared to rule against President Trump? If so, we could have a constitutional crisis. So, not I'm not seeing anytime soon that we could go back to the trade regime we had before inauguration.
I'd say that's great to hear, but not really. But before we end this call, we shouldn't forget the Fed. It feels like the Fed's almost sat in second or third position for the past month. But obviously, the rep on the docket next week. And just before we talk about the Fed, I think we should get a couple things clear first. Or two things. One is you don't expect a cut next week, right?
Right.
And you still expect the Fed to cut six times starting in June.
Based on my recession expectation.
Awesome. So the first sort of question I wanted to ask you is how does Powell actually handle or address sort of this backdrop next week? How do you think he deals with sort of, even if you take out sort of the tariff and the Trump side of things, we can get onto whether Powell's job is finally safe. How does he actually get on, or how does he actually deal with the uncertainty around the data, the GDP prints, and just the sort of the differing signals in the data? How do you think Powell handles the backdrop next week?
I think he has to be very balanced, and that probably means less hawkish than before, because if he's not balanced, he's going to lose Republican support for Fed independence. And more broadly, if he's truly balanced, he should take a nonpartisan view at the macro situation. And it's clear that even without knowing what the administration will do on fiscal, where the tariff will go, I think the downside risk to the economy have really increased significantly. I would actually argue that the uncertainty and the complexity that the administration has generated, those create downside risk to the economy that's not going to be offset by the other policies under consideration, whether it's immigration. They haven't done much. If they get tougher, it adds downside risk to growth. Tariff we just discussed, fiscal policy. I have a hunch we could end up with not much fiscal consolidation and deregulation. I'm not quite sure. I mean, the business environment has been really made much more difficult. So I'm not quite sure what they could do to change it. So, in my view, this wait and see, we need to figure out what they are going to do, attitude on the part of the Fed. I think it's kind of obsolete because one, you could wait forever since the policy is kind of made on the fly, let's face it. It could be a case of the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And then there is this big issue of downside risk that the public is not aware of because of the complexity. But the Fed, with its 500 PhD economists, should understand what's coming. So I think Powell needs to be less hawkish this time around.
Okay, so a little less hawkish, but probably somewhat neutral, sort of in line with what are, the Macro Hive LLM Fed index has been shown a bit more dovish over the past sort of month, but nothing too crazy at the moment. Now,
But
if
I mean, they
God.
are going to tell us that they are doing their meetings, their decision meeting by meeting, based on the available data, blah, blah,
Sounds
blah.
like the
When you
God.
hear that.
The next sort of question I wanted to ask you is, if you are right, cuts do start in June, and again, let's say you're right and power's balanced next week. What confirms to the Fed and what confirms to Powell that they need to start cutting in June? What data are you watching between now and June to confirm your suspicions that, okay, look, we are in a scenario where the Fed needs to cut, and they need to cut several times.
So we'll have two inflation numbers and one more employment number. So basically, this month is when we feel the pain. And so this would be the key data, but evidence of a slowdown in demand as well as a continuation of a trend of slower import price inflation. The PPI has not changed much, even though it was below expectations last month, but a benign PPI as well. And by the way, inflation surprised on the downside. So basically, you want signs of weaker demand and signs that second-round effects could be contained. And of course, the other data that the Fed is looking at, and in a way it's the most important, is long-term inflation expectations. They are looking at the five-year BEs. Those are very flat. And by the way, in theory, if long-term inflation expectations are stable, you could cut tomorrow, right? Because it means that the Fed has credibility, and the public is not expecting an acceleration inflation. I'm being facetious here, but these would be the three categories to look at.
And so, just coming to perhaps the only change we could see next week. And I saw in your preview you talked about QT, some potential changes in liquidity. Are you expecting an update on QT to QT?
Yeah, I think they will slow it because, interestingly, we've seen signs of funding strains on the repo market, even though reserves remain abundant at the moment because the debt ceiling is binding. The government is running down its checking account at the Federal Reserve, otherwise known as the TGA. So that's injecting reserve, and yet we see funding strains in the repo market. And this simply reflects the fact that for some obscure historical reasons, the Fed target is a very small and illiquid part of the broader money market called the Fed funds market. But if you look at ratio of Fed liquidity to a broad measure of the money market, you see that this ratio is at the level of 2019, just before we had this explosion in money market volatility. So a month ago, I predicted that the funding strains would reemerge, and that's where we are. And honestly, with everything that is going on, it's not such a big deal if the Fed either completely stops the roll-off of treasuries, or since they want to get rid of MBS, and MBS are rolling off at about 15 billion a month, they could actually start small purchases of treasuries. But in the grand scheme of things, this is a small story.
Awesome. So just Powell being somewhat neutral next week, and an update on QT is all we should really be looking for. Okay, Dominic, that was awesome. About half an hour of content of your views, looking forward to what comes out next week and what's happened. Thank you very much. I hope everyone enjoyed the recording. Look forward to next week's action.
Thanks, Ben.